All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. I'm going to whine like I usually do in the beginning. Just got home from kids' baseball game. It's getting late here. Just trying to get these things cranked out for you guys. I committed to one a week and trying to stick to that. So Drake was kind enough to join me tonight. We're going to talk about his spring bear hunt, talk about the industry, filming hunts, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. So how you doing tonight, man?
Doing good, man. I appreciate you letting me get on.
Oh, I'm happy to have you, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk hunting, and it's always good to talk hunting with other people that enjoy the same things. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I've been following your Instagram for, I don't know, a couple of years now. You've got a pretty good following on there, and you post some really cool content, whether it's pictures or reels or YouTube videos. So why don't we talk about like why you started that and kind of what inspired you to do that? And maybe it's evolved since you started, or, you know, let's touch on that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, my whole life I've always liked to hunt. I think one of my earliest memories, I was in the goose blind with my dad at like, 3 or 4 years old and just running around, but, always been hunting, and I always liked taking pictures. And I think that started kind of, after high school, and I was just taking pictures with my phone and just capturing memories of the hunts. And I started posting a little bit in 2021. I actually started my Instagram page. And at that time, it was kind of just a place for me to put all my hunting stuff, so I didn't have to annoy everybody else with all the hunting pictures and stuff like that. But I posted for a while, and most of the time it was just pictures. I wasn't trying to get into reels and videos. But I had one reel that ended up taking off, and it was kind of just a dumb video of a deer picking his head up. And the audio was like something along the lines of the deer sleeping and waking up. I don't know. It was super dumb, but it kind of took off. And I kind of realized that there was, people wanted to follow along, and there was content that could be engaging for other followers. So I kind of kept doing what I was doing, not really knowing what I was doing exactly, but I was doing it and posting videos and started to connect with other people in the industry, and it kind of just went from there. And like I said, I've gained a decent following, and it's been fun to kind of grow it and improve myself of photography or videography or just whatever it is. So yeah, it's been fun.
Right on, man. So you started the Instagram a couple of years ago. So did the YouTube channel follow shortly thereafter, or did you start that later on?
It was later on. It was probably a year or two later that I kind of dove into the YouTube space. I've always liked watching hunting films and really gotten into that, but it was just a daunting task of like, oh, I gotta have this nice camera and I gotta have all this, like the editing platform, right? And so Hunter, my brother-in-law that was on the podcast a couple weeks ago, he helped me a ton getting into the industry and learning it, because he had his page for a while. And so I had met him and we kind of started hunting together, and then I'd had my page by then, but not just up to his level of experience. And so he had a nice camera, so I ended up getting a camera a couple of years later and kind of just focusing more on the real content for a while. And like I said, I started a couple of years later, and then my first actual filmed hunt that I produced myself was just last year. It was just a javelina hunt down in Arizona. I didn't have a tag, and Hunter and my dad and my brother had a tag. So it was a pretty rough video probably, but it got me started, and I feel like this last one of my bear hunt was a lot better. So
yeah, I mean, you got to start somewhere, right? I think most of us, you know, including myself, my first videos were awful, and like, I'm not just saying that to say they're bad, like not framed right. Like I had to crop in and stretch them out and stuff. And I ended up making like my body and face look all, distorted. It just didn't look right. You know, it was just distorted really bad. And audio is awful. And I'm still learning and still trying to perfect it. Right. Cause I think as a video creator, we probably nitpick ourselves more than anybody watching them. Right. Like, 100%. I know I do. Like, I know when I go back and watch it, I always find something that I wish I would have edited differently or fixed the audio, you know, better. Or when I was filming in the field, there's a couple of clips in my recent spring bear film where I used my phone to film for some reason when I had my camera on my shoulder of my backpack. Like, there's a part where I was filming a mountain lion, and I took my big lens off, and I was walking back to my spike cam to load up and to bomb further into this drainage. And I was talking to my phone instead of my camera, explaining kind of like what happened. And I hate it in the video because the audio is horrible. It's like kind of windy, and it's, anyway, it drives me nuts because I feel like I've struggled with audio the most lately out of all the things. So anyway, I hear you. It's always a evolving thing.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm far from a professional or even probably half decent, but I like putting them together, and I'm lucky that this last hunt, I mean, Hunter, I guess Hunter was on the podcast before the bear hunt.
Yeah.
But we had done two different trips, and we can talk about this later, but done two different trips, and the first trip was really slow, and the second one started kind of slow. So I kind of like almost gave up on the film because I was like, nobody wants to watch a film with no kill shot or no action. And so I was lucky enough to be able to have a few key pieces where I could piece together a decent story. But like I said, could have made it a lot better. What do you do to try to capture the whole story? Like, even when it's rough and you're not seeing anything, like, how do you stay engaged on the filming and capture the whole story?
From what you're explaining. So when I first started, when I was putting my films together, I noticed that like I was missing days of footage, right? So I was like, when I was trying to tell the story, it would jump from like day, say two, when you're like, you're really energetic about filming because the hunt just started and you're not kind of down in the dumps yet. You're not seeing stuff, right? So you're all jacked up to film. And then let's say like you get to day six or seven and it's been slow for 4 days or whatever it may be. That stuff starts to creep into your head. Like, you don't want to get the camera out. You don't want to shoot a time lapse. You don't want to shoot a time lapse at night because it's like, you know, you're starting to think like, am I even going to put this together? And then you kill an elk on day nine or something and you're missing 5 days of struggling. And it's like, okay, you can still put a film together, but part of hunting is the struggle. Like, the majority of hunting, to be honest, is the struggle. Like, the success comes in like a 3 minute window usually. Right. So it's like, you got to figure out a way to keep the audience engaged through the struggle, right? Through the hiking and the glassing and the, you know, setting up camp and moving and, you know, all the stuff that goes on. And, you know, when I made this last spring bear video, it was like almost an hour long. And I always go back and forth in my head, like, do I cut all this hiking and talking to the camera crap out and just kind of jump right to the action? Or do I leave it all in? And I decided to leave it all in because a lot of guys can relate to that, you know, let's be honest, right? Like, you know, they say 10% of hunters fill their tag every year or something like that. Right. So, you know, that means a lot of guys aren't filling their tag. So the way I started thinking about it was most of the guys watching this are going to relate to that part of the hunt anyway. So if you can find some cool time lapses, take some cool starry night shots and, you know, make the glassing and the country look epic, you know, hopefully you can keep people engaged. And if you're seeing other animals during the hunt that you can film, I found that helps a lot, you know, filming other wildlife that's out there just to, you know, show people what you're seeing. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like I said, I mean, that's how my video of the spring bear hunt, I wanted to put a video out, but then it ended up kind of like what you were saying. I think I had a clip from every day. So just some sort of update, but it wasn't much. And so it kind of bounced around. Like I said, I threw some stuff together and made it work. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you filming with multiple cameras now, or are you just running the one camera?
Just the one camera. I originally, when I first started to get into the content, I bought my first camera, and it was a Sony a7 II. So it was an older camera, but camera gear is expensive. And I was like, I don't know if I want to get into this. I don't know how much I'll use it and if I'll be good at it. So I kind of just bought a budget camera. It was an older camera. I bought used, and I think that's a great way to start. It's like, a lot of those cameras are great. And then once you figure out you want to upgrade and get into it more, then you can upgrade. So I actually just bought an a7 IV. And so it's been pretty sweet and a big upgrade for me. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you say that. I've been looking at I'm waiting for the Sony a7 V to come out. And the only reason, honestly, is because I have the Sony a7S III, which I bought used, just like you did, from a guy that shot real estate photography, and he bought like a really nice video camera for some reason, and he ended up selling it to me for a pretty good price with like very little use. And nice. I bought most of my lens. Every one of my lenses is used except my 24 to 240. I bought that one new. But you can totally buy really good camera gear on Marketplace or whatever for, you know, 2/3 of the price new. So nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. But I want that Sony a7 V because it's going to have a higher megapixel sensor than my a7 S3. And I've picked up some wedding photography, just learning how to use a camera for hunting videos. I learned how to take pictures, and people pay a lot of money for wedding photography. So I was like, I can make a couple grand taking pictures for 5 or 6 hours. Like, why not? You know? So
No, that's awesome. Yeah. I'm sure you're familiar. I bought all my camera gear off MPB, like my lens, my camera, it's used, and they have like a pretty good place where they go through the camera and make sure everything's good. And the shutter count was like super low, so it was like minimal use. So I was pretty happy with it. And I've been amazed with the quality, and because my A7 II wasn't even 4K. And so now I'm filming in 4K and learning how to balance that and learning how to deal with the bigger files. So it's been fun.
Yeah. So are you shooting in, we're probably going to lose everybody, which I guess it is what it is. Cause I kind of geek out on the camera stuff now that I've started to understand it a little bit more. But anyway, so are you shooting everything in 24 frames a second or 60? What's your go-to?
24 frames per second for the most part. And then like my slow-mo clips. That's what I've kind of just talked to other people like Logan Romney. I know you've talked to him, and I lived in the same town as him for quite a few years up in Idaho. And so we always got together, and I learned a lot from him. But that's what he kind of mentioned to me, was 24 frames per second was kind of the standard. And then if you need some slow-mo shots, go from there. But yeah. Like I said, I'm still a rookie, so I'm still learning. So
yeah, no, I hear you. I used to shoot everything in 60 just so I could slow down like any clip I wanted to, which obviously takes, you know, it's more bigger files, so it takes up more space on your cards and whatnot. But I'm not good enough to like in my mind plan like everything I want to slow down during the hunt. So I started filming everything in 60, and then I actually finally set up my camera to where my main camera settings on 24. And then when I rotate to 1, it's 60. And when I rotate to 2, it's 120. So like I can quickly switch stuff now, which I should have set up a long time ago, but I never did it. So I don't know. It's always an ebb and a flow, and things change and things are different. And how about ND filters? I just added an ND filter to my camera setup last year.
Yeah, I've been running one. I know they have like, I can't remember what the name of the expensive one is. I can't remember, but it's a couple $100. I just bought a cheaper one off Amazon, and I feel like it's done the job for me of just getting the right exposure. So I'm not having to run my,
change your shutter speed and stuff all around.
My shutter speed super high, or get it at the right, cause it's supposed to be what, like 2x the frame rate.
Yeah.
So that helps with that, like keeping the lighting right, so you can run that at 2x the frame rate. So I like it. It's good. And I think I like it also cause it's like a lens cover like that can get scratched up a little bit, and I can just buy a new one the next year. Yeah. So it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up buying the Peter McKinnon variable ND filter, the 2-5. So it allows me to leave my camera set up at whatever frame rate I'm filming in. And then I can just twist the front of the ND filter from 2-5 to darken it up if, you know, it's really bright out. But honestly, sometimes 5 is not even dark enough. I'm thinking about buying the 6-9 as well, because that ND filter system will attach to the lens with the like quick mag lock adapter that it comes with. So like you can pop it on and off super fast. So I don't know. I haven't decided yet, but I might pull the trigger on another one. They're not very heavy. So
that was the one I was thinking about, because mine... And that like quick detach, it would be super nice, because mine, I have to like unscrew the whole thing. And so it's kind of a pain to switch on and off, but I feel like mine has a pretty good, I guess like range that I can go from, that it adapts pretty well. So.
Yeah. Right on. Well, last camera question real quick. So what's the lens that you love to run when you're out there filming? What's your go-to lens?
I only have one lens, and that's just because I'm kind of just getting into it. But I did quite a bit of research and talking to a few people, and I ended up going with the Tamron 28-200. And it's like I wanted something to give me some range, to get some cooler shots zoomed in, and like maybe some kill shots, like the archery hunt. Like, I think it's a perfect lens for like archery hunt kill shots. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
But also, it can be good for like landscape photos too. And so I've liked it so far, and I want to get a bigger lens, like a 2-600 or something like that, but that'll be in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. That lens that you have is I think it's an F2.8 at the 28. Yep. And 2 years ago, Slayer Calls sent a camera guy with us on a elk hunt. And he had the Sony A7 S3 body, but he ran that 28-200 Tamron lens the whole hunt. Just because, you know, you got the low light 28 F2.8, and then you can reach out with that 200. So it's a great lens for an archery elk hunt, you know, especially with a guy filming the hunt from like a third party view. So I think you made a good choice on that one for sure.
Yeah, I've liked it so far. I'd recommend it to anyone that gets started, and it's at a decent price point too. So it's not crazy expensive. So I think it's a great all around lens.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I ended up going with the 24-240 instead of that 28-200, just because I like the wider angle when I'm like, a lot of my films are self filmed. Sure. So I'm like holding the camera out just away with my arm, and it gives me just a little bit wider of an angle. But I've thought about that 28-200 quite a few times as well. So it's a rabbit hole, man. It's like golf or anything else you do, you know, you think you get a new lens or a new camera, just like a new driver, all of a sudden you're going to hit it straight or whatever. And, you know, you're still slicing it or hooking it. So, yeah. It just, you know, I think it just comes down to how creative you are. You know, you can make almost anything work.
Yeah. It's, speaking of the self filming, I'm only like 5'6". I'm pretty short. And so, like, I have to be a full extension of the arm to get like a me. So I'm not like, it's not just on my face.
Yeah.
But that's all right.
Yeah. That's part of it. Yeah. I'm really excited this year. So we should draw Wyoming for the first time ever. And Slayer was kind enough to, give us a little bit of a budget again this year to hire. Actually, I'm hiring Logan Romney to come film our Wyoming elk hunt. Assuming that we draw, knock on wood, we should know real soon here. But I can't wait to like not have to worry about the camera on an archery elk hunt and have a guy that knows what he's doing, has a great camera, you know, great lenses. He's in good shape. He knows how to hunt. So it's like, it should be a really killer trip. And, I can't wait for that.
Yeah. That'll be a riot, dude. Logan's a good dude. And that'll be a blast. Like I've wanted to do that for a while. And I think I'm in dental school right now, and so I'm pretty busy, and I'm not working, so I'm not making any money at all. And so in the next few years I'll hire a cameraman and get some sweet films out there, because it would take a lot of pressure off of you and just being able to go 100%, and also to be able to, I think the cool part about hiring a videographer is to get the shots that you normally wouldn't, like if you're having like a super serious conversation with your hunting buddy about like, yep. Like he's right over your shoulder getting that. And so I think that'll be sweet.
Yeah. So, while we're on that topic, so what inspired me to even start filming was the Born and Raised Outdoor guys, like the Land of the Free series, the first one, the second one, those two are just, you know, epic in my opinion. And, their films just have that awesome, like brotherhood camaraderie between all the guys on the hunt, you know, talking trash, hyping each other up, you know, packing bulls out, whatever it was like. And I feel like, we miss all that. Cause like, I'm just holding it out, talking to the camera to tell them what's going on. So, I'm really looking forward to being able to have somebody capture that dialogue between my brother and myself, whether we're pissed off cause we screwed up a setup or, you know, we killed something and we're amped or
yeah,
whatever happens. Like we miss most of that stuff, right? Cause we don't have somebody there. So I'm super excited to get that, that look, you know what I'm saying?
That'll be sweet, man. I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, hopefully we kill a bull.
that'll make it. That'll make the video that much better.
Yeah, yeah. All right, man. Well, enough with the camera stuff. Hopefully we have a couple of people left at this point. But let's. I love to hear a good hunting story. I do get a decent amount of feedback on the podcast about that. People like hearing good hunting stories. So let's jump into your spring bear hunt just from a couple of days ago.
Yeah, man. So kind of started off. Obviously, so Hunter, he's from Idaho and I'm from Southern Nevada. And so there's not a ton of bears where I'm down from, but, he kind of introduced me to the whole thing and we tried to go 2 years ago, but we were both working in the summer out of the state and it just didn't work and we had to take off. And then last year we went and hunted for 6 days and saw two bears and it was just, I think it was early. I mean, I've learned a lot about bears, but I think it was just early. We had a later snowstorm and like I said, we just didn't have the success that we had hoped for. But, so we had planned this year, we ended up pushing it back 2 weeks from when we went the year before. And so we also planned two different trips. So me and Hunter were going to go up the first weekend and then we'd have our dads, the next weekend with us. And so me and Hunter went up the first week. I think it was like a Thursday to Sunday and we didn't have ideal weather. It was like cloudy a lot of the days with like most of the sun we had was like in the mornings. And I don't know about you, but from what we've seen and what I've talked to a lot of people about, like we don't see a ton of bears in the morning. They're just a lot more active in the afternoon. And so when we got that sun, we'd try to be out on the knob somewhere glassing, just hope we could turn up a bear so we could relocate him in the afternoon. But a lot of the afternoons were rain. Like I sat out of a rainstorm for like 3 hours one night and it finally cleared off for like the last 45 minutes light but no bears were seen, but it was a good time. We had seen a little bear sign, like tracks going across the snow, but we didn't even see a bear that first trip. And so we had looked at the weather that next weekend and it was supposed to be a lot better. It was supposed to be like sunny. I was getting there Wednesday night and it was supposed to be sunny from Wednesday to Sunday. And so we were pretty stoked about that. And I feel like bears are pretty temperamental as far as like weather goes, like wind or rain, or they like their sunny and no wind. So we were pretty stoked about that. We ended up going up and Hunter and his dad actually went up a day before me. And so they went up and they glassed up three bears in the first evening they were up there. And so they couldn't get them killed. They tried to close the distance. I think they got to like 800 yards and then tried to turn them up again, but just never glassed them up.
So is this the same area you hunted the weekend or the first trip?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So same area. We just kind of figured that it was pretty dependent on the weather and give it another week and more bears be coming out. But yeah, pretty much the exact same area. So they glassed up three bears, couldn't turn them up. And it was a pretty good hike to where they glassed those bears up into. And so me and my dad showed up the next day and we were like, well, those bears should stay there. They're probably not going anywhere. And so we had tried a new place that we wanted to try. They went up that morning and kind of drove the roads and basically kind of looked into where we wanted to get into. So we ended up going in there and glassed a ton of country back in there. And we only I glassed up a sow and two cubs that night, which it was awesome that we're actually seeing bears, you know, like that boosts morale and confidence that you're going to see them in the future. So we saw, and this sow was like probably the biggest bear I've ever seen. Like she was giant and it was a long ways away. She was probably close to 2 miles away. And sorry, I'm getting some messages. I just want to,
there you go. I wasn't sure if that was me or not.
No, that was me. Sorry about that.
It's all good. Don't worry about it.
But yeah, she was a big sow. And so that was cool to see. Since we didn't see anything else that afternoon, we were like, okay, let's go back into where they saw the three bears and let's go kill one of them. And so we ended up going back in there midday. We got back in there pretty early, just to get a head start back up in there, give ourselves a ton of time to turn up a bear. And we had got to the trailhead and there were, I think 4 four-wheelers at the trailhead. And we were like, crap, like, what do we do? And so, it was to a spot. I can't remember how far. It was like 3-something miles to get in there. I don't know. It was a decent hike. And we didn't have the time. We didn't think we had enough time to go to the other spot we would probably go to, because it would take us too long to get there and then back up, and we just wouldn't have enough time. It wouldn't be worth it. So we're like, well, let's just go up in here. If they're on our knob, we'll go to the next knob. I don't know. We're just going to figure it out. So we end up going up in there and end up passing three guys. As we were going in, they were coming out and they were had their packs and they had slept in there that night. And we had asked them what they saw, but you know how it is, like, who knows if they're going to tell you the truth. And I probably wouldn't either. And so they said they didn't see any bears in there. But they had slept and pretty much glassed in the same place that my brother-in-law had, that Hunter had glassed those bears up. And so we're like, there's no way that they didn't see those bears. They should have came out, like, it was nice weather. So we go up in there and we end up glassing that whole night. We end up splitting up. My dad and me went to one knob and Hunter and his dad went to a different knob and we didn't see a bear that night. So that was kind of frustrating that we didn't go back in there that day before. Mm-hmm. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, right? But we end up coming out that night, not really knowing what to do because we had hit a few spots that we'd already wanted to hit. And there'd been this one spot that me and Hunter had been to multiple times over the last few years that has always produced bears for him in the years before I started hunting with him. But ever since I started hunting with him, we had never seen a bear in there. And so, like, he's killed their group before, his family had killed like four or five bears in that one canyon. But every time we went in there, never saw a bear. And so we were driving back to camp and I kind of had the thought to go back in there. And I came back and talked to Hunter and I was like, I don't know. And we were talking about it, and he basically brought up my exact same thought that we should go back in that canyon. So we were like, yeah, I might as well do it. And wanted to get there early because we'd known that there's people hunting that area. And we just basically kind of wanted to secure our spot right there and hoping that no one would come up in there, even though we did that same thing the day before. But we ended up hiking up around like 1 o'clock, I think 12:31, we started hiking up and we were almost at the glassing knob and we're just kind of leaning on our trekking poles and throwing up the glass every once in a while. And hunters end up spotting a bear at like 1:30, which I had never seen a bear that early. I don't know about you. Have you seen like...
No. So for us, normally it's like what you said in the beginning. So this last trip, we saw 11 bears and we saw one bear at like 10 a.m., a pretty young boar, jet black. But all the other bears we saw on the trip, hold on. Yeah. So we saw 9 of them during the evening, like from that 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock window.
Yeah.
One we saw in the morning in that same canyon on like the second to last day. And then on the way out the following day, like the last day, we saw a bear at like 11:30, like in the wide open sun cooking. Like I was shocked it was out on a sunny hillside. But normally, no, we don't see them at all during like from like 5 to 8 is the prime time typically for us. Yeah.
And that's what it's been like for us too. So it was pretty sweet to see a bear the midday and to be able to know where he's at and have time, plenty of time to get over there and game plan what we wanted to do. So, and usually on a hunt like that, where, cause I had a tag, Hunter had a tag and his dad had a tag, like usually from how I've hunted and how hunters hunt as well, like whoever spots it gets a option if they want to kill it or not. Right. But the last 2 years, Hunter's been way cool because he's killed a couple bears and he's like, hey, I want to get you your first bear. So it was not dang nice of him to do that. And so I kind of knew I was on the gun. So we got up to the glassing knob and we ended up deciding to leave my dad there just to have a long look and to be able to see a lot more country. Why we kind of side-hilled across a bunch of ridges and then we end up cutting across. But anyways, right as we left, that bear ended up going into the trees, which we kind of figured that he wasn't going to be out for very long. But we were pretty confident that he was going to come back out on that hillside. So like I said, we side-hilled across some nasty country. It's like this steep, it was like almost sandy. So like when you're side-hilling, it would just slide, your feet would slide. Mm-hmm. And there had been a spot that we had kind of planned as our shooting knob that if the bear was at least halfway or lower on the mountain, you could get a shot off. It'd be like 600 yards ish. But anything higher, it'd be stretching it. And so we kind of got to that that shooting knob that we had kind of planned, and where he was ended up being like almost 1,000 yards. Like, it was just a lot farther than we thought. And with Cross Canyon, that type of stuff, like, nobody wants to be taking that shot. It's just, I don't know, at least for me, right? And so we kind of had two options. We were on the opposite side of the canyon from the bear, but we were looking up at him towards. So we either had two options: to cross the river and then go up on the same side of the canyon that he was on, or go farther down the canyon and look up at him. But if we did that, we probably wouldn't be able to see the whole entire face that he was on. Like, it would kind of shrink the what we could see to be a lot smaller. So I was like, well, I don't want to get to that spot down the canyon and not be able to see him. My dad's like, oh, he's out feeding right there, and we have a zero shot, and we've already wasted some time waiting for him to come out. And so we ended up crossing, I guess it was probably a big creek in the bottom, and then going up the steep, nasty face to where we hoped that we could get a shot to shoot across canyon. So we ended up going up this big face, getting up there. It cleared up perfect. There was like a little burn area that we could see the face the bear was on. And we were sitting there for probably, we got to where we shot from. We got there probably like at 4 o'clock. So it was about that time, but it could be 2-3 hours, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we were sitting there, and I had kind of got my shooting position. I had my pack laid out, bipod up, and got my rear rest all kind of settled. It was just a bunch of like pieces of wood with my bino harness on it, but it was pretty sturdy, and we were ready for that bear to come out. And I think it was probably about 5 o'clock. Hunter and my dad like simultaneously spotted a different bear that came out lower in the canyon. Like, I think at that time he was 600 yards from us. So he was closer than the bear that we had originally seen. That bear was about 700 yards. And then this bear was 600 yards, and he was a lot bigger bear. The bear we had originally spotted was like a smaller cinnamon bear. Like, he was a super cool color, but this bear was noticeably bigger and closer. And so it caught us by surprise. We were kind of freaking out, and because he was in the bottom and I didn't have much clearance over the trees that were in front of me. If he went any lower, I might lose him. And so I hurried, got on the gun. We got a range and ended up ranging him at 595, 600 yards. And I was super steady. To preface this, I had been shooting and practicing a lot before this with my gun. I got a new gun. We had built some awesome loads that a buddy from my hometown had helped us out with. And we had been shooting a lot, like out to 1,000 yards, even though I wasn't going to shoot that far. I wanted to practice, right? And so I'd been shooting a lot, and I was very, very confident that distance of 600 yards. And so laid down, took my first shot, and we didn't know where it hit. That snow had recently melted off over there. So it was like a muddy, so it wasn't like anything that you would see dirt fly. So Hunter didn't see, and Hunter had the spotter on him. He didn't see where the bullet hit, but the bear kind of jumped up and then ran up the hill like 50 yards. And so I got on him again, shot again, and ended up hitting him for sure that time. He kind of jumped and then started biting at himself like they do and spinning in circles. And so he kind of took off down to the bottom and then ended up going out of sight from us, but my dad could still see him. And my dad saw blood coming across the snow and him spinning in circles in the bottom too. So we knew he had a decent hit at least, like he was bleeding and he was hurt. And so, but we didn't see if he went down or where he went. And so we gave him probably 45 minutes and went over basically in the draw that he went up, and there was a big avalanche chute. Like, you could see big old pine trees that had tipped over. It was kind of cool. Big old pine trees that tipped over in an avalanche that came down that chute. Anyways, we started working up that, and I was on one side, the side that the bear was, and Hunter was on the other side, kind of working our way up, seeing if we could turn him up, like just in our binos and taking it really slow like you do. And Hunter ended up seeing him from the other side of the hill, just laying against a tree, but he was still moving a little bit. We weren't sure if he was just bedded down or what he was doing, but we ended up going over there, and it was like 100 yards. I laid down and just shot him again, and he rolled down from 100 yards. He rolled down the snowshoe all the way down to like 20 yards, and so it was pretty sweet.
That's awesome, man. So I know there's a lot of guys that are going to be curious. What round are you shooting? What gun? What caliber? 7 PFC. Okay. Yeah. A lot of guys give me crap for shooting that gun because it's the new cool thing out there, but I have shooting the same thing. Yeah.
The new fad. Yeah.
Yeah. So what bullet?
Berger 195s.
Okay. So you're shooting a pretty big bullet. So yeah. The first shot, I mean, the shot that you knew you hit him on, the second shot, did it end up hitting him good and he was just dying, or was it a little back, a little forward? What'd you guys find?
It was a little bit back. I hit him on like the front edge of the guts. And so I think he would have died, but he was just taking his time, you know? And so, and I'm the type of person to put another one in him if you can. And so I know when people are shoot them once and let them take their time, but I've been a part of animals where you have the option to, and you don't, and then you end up losing the animal. Like I like to see him die right then and there. So I decided to put another one in him, and people may have different opinions, but end up doing it and end up recovering him. So.
Yeah. I mean, everyone always has an opinion, and you know how it is. You start putting yourself out there in front of everyone, you're going to get some grief for no matter what you do. It doesn't matter. You just got to stick true to what you think's right. So I would have done the same thing. I would have shot again. We always do the same thing, put them down. I feel like you owe it to the animal to, you know, put them out of their misery as quickly as possible. They don't go down right away. So,
for sure.
And
on my YouTube video, I got a lot of like that grief from, they're like, oh, you're shooting 600 yards. Like that's, you're just lobbing bullets over there and it's unethical. And I mean, people don't know how much time you put into shooting, and and mistakes happen. Like I talked to Hunter about it. I talked to my dad. Like I was kicking myself pretty good. Like when I think I missed that first shot. I think I just hit low, and I don't know what it was. I've done everything I had, like my drop chart, and I had my environmentals and everything like that, like pretty dialed in. So I was kicking myself that I didn't make that shot, and I felt bad because I should have. But people don't know how much time you put into shooting your gun and knowing your gun and doing all that. And so, like I said, everyone has their opinions, but it ended up working out.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if it makes you feel any better, but we caught grief. We always catch grief every video. Same thing, shooting a 7 PRC. I bought that gun because I was shooting a 300 Win Mag, which is a great round. But it was a super heavy gun. It was like 11 or 12 pounds. And I'm like, dude, I can shave like 4 pounds off my rifle setup if I build a new rifle. So I decided to build a 7 PRC just for that like honest reason. I wanted a foldable chassis and a 4 pound lighter gun. So that's what I did. And I have a buddy, Russ Carver, who does my hand loads for me. And literally 2 days before we went on our spring bear hunt, I went back to the range just to verify the gun was on, which is the same gun I've hunted with for like the last 2 or 3 years now. It's killed a lot of animals, a couple elk, a couple deer, a couple bears. I was shooting steel at 550 yards, didn't miss one time, right? Just plink, plink, plink. But we go on this hunt and my brother has a, you know, in my opinion, like a chip shot.
Yeah.
No wind. You know, we're pretty much level with the bear as far as elevation goes. We're a little bit above him, but anyway, perfect position, shooting prone. The bear has no idea we're there and he misses at 450 yards. He shot like probably 8 inches over its back. And everybody wants to say, oh, what are you doing shooting that far and all this crap? And it's like, dude, you have no idea. I've been shooting this gun for years. I've put hundreds of rounds through it. It just happens. Like it's easy to shoot steel and off a bench, you know, and there's no pressure, but you get in the moment and, you know, your adrenaline's pumping and you're super, you know, amped up to knock this animal down, and things don't always go perfect. It's hunting. So, it is what it is, man. It's just part of it.
For sure. Yep. And that's, like I said, I mean, just like you said, like you can put in as much time as you want and know your gun to a T and know everything. But like I said, jitters get to you or whatever it was. Right. And so,
yeah,
that's hunting.
Definitely. I can think back to like the first out of state bull I killed in Idaho. I could shoot my bow out to 100 yards in my front yard and put most of those arrows in a pie plate, if not all of them, a dozen arrows, right? Not that I'm going to shoot an animal that far, but it's like, hey, if I can shoot 100 yards and hit a pie plate over and over again, you know, it makes those 60, 50, 40 yard shots feel like a chip shot. But I missed two bulls on that trip, you know, shot underneath one at like 50 yards, which I was kicking myself for. And I rushed a shot on a giant bull, which probably would be my biggest bull to date. Just made a rookie mistake and didn't let the bull come in closer. And I had an open window at 50 and went mew and stopped him and shot. And my arrow deflected off the top of this little like Christmas tree that was like 4 feet tall. Like if it, there was nothing else, I didn't even see that tree there. Like I was so focused on the elk.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's just hunting, man. Like you practice, 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 which is great to do. Like I'm an advocate for that, of course, but sure. When you're in the moment, man, I kind of black out. Like the bull I killed this year in Montana was probably, to be honest, like the first archery bull that I've killed that I had like full control of the shot before I let the arrow go. Like Sometimes I just black out. Like I get in the moment and like, I'm so focused on that little situation that I like forget everything I've worked on, you know? So I think as you just go through those failures, you learn and you start to get more control of the situation.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
So anyway, so back to the story. So you kill this bear and obviously you recovered him. So was that the last bear of the trip you guys killed or did you guys keep hunting?
No, that was the last bear of the trip. We had planned on possibly hunting the next day, but so we ended up killing the bear and we were getting the pictures and all that kind of stuff. And it started to get like super dark skies. We're like, this wasn't in the forecast. Like there was like a, I don't know, maybe 30, 40% chance of rain the next day, but it was like in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And so none of us had rain jackets. Like I just had the Go Hunt atmosphere jacket, which is like not rainproof at all, waterproof at all. And so
super sick jacket, but definitely not waterproof.
Yeah. It's a super jacket. Yeah. Like I just wasn't planning on it. And I mean that whole week and the week before I was packing my rain jacket and I don't know why I took it out, but I did. Anyways, it started dumping on us like 30 minutes after we had gotten to the bear. And so my camera was in my bag and we were like trying to skin out the bear as fast as we could. And while we're all drenched and it was kind of a shit show, but we ended up getting it done and getting it off the mountain.
That's good. That's killer.
So and it ended up raining all that night and then the next day as well. And so we were kind of just content with what happened and took it home.
Yeah, it never fails when you take the tarp out of your backpack or your rain gear. And then, yeah, spring bear hunting is wild weather. You never know what you're going to get. Last year on our hunt, Joseph and I were set up on this ridge. We spike hunted in, you know, like 6 or 7 miles or whatever it was. I think it was like 9 miles, actually. Yeah, 9 miles. And we were laying in the tent in the middle of the day holding it. It was blowing so hard. We were holding the tent down. It started snowing sideways and then it would rain and snow and it was blowing like 40 or 50 miles an hour. And I was like, that wasn't in the forecast, but thank God we were at the tent when it happened because I'm pretty sure that thing would have been blown away when we got back.
For sure. Yeah, the Idaho spring weather it's nuts. It's unpredictable. It can get like super cold and then you're in a t-shirt sweating in the day and it's crazy.
Yeah. So one thing I picked up on during your hunt story there was it sounded like you guys were doing a ton of day hunting. Do you guys typically do day hunts for spring bear or do you kind of mix it up?
Yeah, we've done day hunts. That's all we've done. And like I said, I owe everything I know to Hunter about spring bear hunting. And so That's what he did. And they've had awesome success. They've killed a lot of bears. I was kind of going to ask you, because when you pack in like that, you're kind of secluding yourself to one area for,
yeah.
I mean, you can obviously walk to the next canyon over, but the general area, do you scout those areas before, or are you just doing e-scouting and putting a pin on the map and going, or how are you doing that?
Well, I don't want to give away all my secrets. There's a lot of information on the internet. That's where I found it all. But, what I've started to do over the years is when I pick an area to hunt for spring bear, I pick a main drainage, right? So it's like, it's not necessarily the river, right? but yeah. It's a drainage that goes back, let's say, you know, 7 to 12 miles, let's say. So in a drainage that's that big, if you have a 10-day hunt plan, like in my opinion, you're probably not even going to hunt that whole canyon, because, you know, by the time, you know, you hike up, you know, 2000 to 3000 feet, that kind of gets you on the first glassing knob into the drainage, let's say a mile or maybe 2 miles, right? Well, the drainage goes back another 6-7 miles. I mean, you're talking dropping down and going up and dropping down and going up, like 7 to 10 different side drainages, right? No trail, blow down, you know, you're in the backcountry. So I started picking canyons like that, where like I'm kind of committing to one drainage, but I'm also hunting like up to 10 different side drainages that tie into this drainage. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, that makes sense.
And then I look for the nastiest canyons I can find, like the nastiest, like super steep, really rocky, avalanche chute, like just nasty, rugged stuff. Like, I don't know what it is about bears, but we find bears in just absolute hell holes, it seems like. So, that's what I look for. And then, I thought I had something kind of figured out last year. I talked about on the podcast like 5 episodes ago. We were seeing a ton of bears in years past on north facing slopes, which I know kind of goes against what you would think, right? Yeah. What I kind of racked that up to be in my goofy head was, I felt like the bears maybe denned on that side of the mountain, because in the fall, like that's where all the shade is. And then, you know, snow comes in, you know, November or whatever, and they've spent a lot of time over there and, you know, in the hot months, you know, trying to stay cool. And by that time in the fall, there's grass growing in the trees and stuff. So I thought I had something figured out. And then this year it was how it was supposed to be. We saw like every single bear, but one on south facing slope. So I guess I don't necessarily have that whole thing figured out in my head, but, that main drainage thing. And then the snow, I look on, there's a website. I think it's the National Forest website. I always just type in on like Google, US Forest Service snow level map, and it pops up. And that's like an interactive map that shows the snow levels like really accurately day by day by day. Oh, and cool. I started a target like 3 or 4 years ago, just pretty much 500 feet below that snow elevation. And that seems to kind of be the sweet spot where the grass has been exposed to the sunlight for 2 weeks at that point, 3 weeks, and you've got that fresh green stuff where they seem to be. So that's kind of what I do. And yeah, we always hike in. We never really day hunt. Just we love to bomb in somewhere and hope for the best.
No, that's awesome, man. That's something like coming from Southern Nevada, that's just like not a thing. Like when I grew up, there's roads, like we hiked our butt off. Like don't get me wrong, but there's roads everywhere, and like there's no need to really pack in on some of the like the Southern Nevada and just some Northern Nevada stuff. Like you can for sure benefit from doing that. But where I hunted and grew up, like, I mean, we had great success and we killed a lot of deer and elk doing what we did. And maybe we could pack in, but it was just something I hadn't done. Then I moved up to Idaho and it's just a whole different world up there. It's big country and people hunt hard up there and backpack in, and it's a cool thing. And we've done a few backpacking trips and it's a blast. And so it's something I want to do more of for sure.
Yeah. And it's weird how like, depending on the species, I kind of target each animal a little differently, right? Like elk, I would say, in my opinion, don't overcommit to a drainage. Usually I would say like 3 days of food. For me, what I like to do is put like hunt plan A through J together, right? Like 6 or 10 good hunt plans in different areas. And then I'll go into a drainage with like 3 days of food and a teepee and hunt it. And if the elk are there, then I'm okay. I got 3 days of food. Hopefully I can kill a bull. Yeah. Or they're not there and I can bomb out super fast and I can move somewhere else pretty quickly. But for bear and for like mule deer, I feel like I've had more luck just suffering, getting into a huge main drainage and just spending more time behind my glass. And over the years, I'm not the most patient person, honestly. But I feel like I've learned that I find more success when I spend more time behind my glass looking for bears and for deer than bouncing around all over the place.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You know, like I said, something I want to do like a backpack in Idaho, like deer hunt would be sweet. That's something on the bucket list I want to do. So it'd
be fun. Yeah. Yeah. Last year we did, so I killed a bull in Montana with my bow, and I've had a two bull year goal for, 5 or 6 years. And I had a rifle elk tag and a rifle deer tag in Idaho that same year last year. So I felt like I had a real chance to have my two bull year with the archery bull going down in Montana. And so my brother and I bombed in, shot a couple bucks on day two and three of that hunt. And then we spent the last 7 days looking for elk, got our butts kicked by the elk, but ended up knocking two bulls down the same night, like second to last day of our trip. And that was crazy, packing both those bulls out. It was a totally crazy experience how it all went down. You know, my brother shot that 5-point bull, and then a 6-point bull stepped out like 200 yards below that 5-point bull. So, dude, I love backpacking in Idaho, man. Like, I'm so bummed that they're going to go to a draw here soon.
Sure.
I just was talking to Joe McCarthy on a podcast. I haven't uploaded it yet, but kind of about like, I'm just so worried about like how hard it's going to be to draw tags everywhere now, you know, with Colorado taking away the archery, you know, over the counter stuff. And, now Idaho doing that here pretty quick as well. I know the Q system's been an absolute shit show, but
crazy.
Still been able to get a tag every year. So it's not been that bad in my opinion. But I'm just worried with, you know, losing OTC Colorado and now Idaho here soon, like it's just going to make all these other states harder and harder and harder to draw, right? Because these guys are going to find other places to hunt. So I feel like Montana is going to get harder to draw. I feel like Wyoming's going to get even harder to draw. Obviously Idaho and Colorado are changing. So man, it's just crazy. It's always changing. You think you got it figured out and then you're back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Luckily, dude, I lived up in Idaho for a while and I knew I was moving, so I ended up buying my lifetime resident license. And so that was a pretty good move on my part, I feel like, for tags in the future, because I'm guaranteed if I want an elk and deer tag every year over the counter, I just have to pay the non-resident price, which it is what it
Whatever.
Is. You eat the price and you go, right?
Yeah.
And I think it'll be a great, because I apply in most Western states, and so it's a great year when you don't draw in Arizona or Wyoming or Nevada or Utah. Like I got Idaho in my back pocket to go. So I think it'll be pretty sweet. You put in for Nevada?
I do. I started in Nevada late. I should have started it 6 years ago when I kind of started applying for all the Western states, but I was like, Nevada is like such a long game for elk. And at the time, like I wasn't really, I don't know. I should have started then, but I started 2 years ago. So I only have like 2 or 3 elk points in Nevada. I did draw a Nevada deer tag as a return tag. So I checked the box when I applied, like, hey, would you take a return tag? And of course I checked it and I picked up a tag, like totally surprised. That was an awesome hunt. I hunted, I think 10 days solo over there. Should have killed a buck, had plenty of opportunities to kill a buck. I was pretty picky for me. Like I wasn't looking for a 2-point or a 3-point. I was looking for a good 140, 150 plus 4-point, which there's a handful of those out there, of course, in Nevada. But, long story short over there, I got impatient. I would stalk into a buck and, I'll tell you one quick story. So I glassed up 3 bucks this morning, like day 8, one of them was a dandy buck, like big wide frame, good forks front and back. And I was just like, okay, that's what I came to Nevada for. Like, heck yeah.
Yeah.
So these 3 bucks, they bed in like this pocket of willows or whatever kind of trees they have over there. And I circle all the way around. By that time, it's like mid morning. It's like 11, sun's high, thermals are going up. So of course I'm trying to stay above the deer, which I did. And I get over there and I'm like 200 yards from where the deer are bedded. And I pick up 2 of the 3 bucks, the 2 smaller bucks. And they get up out of their beds and they feed directly away from me, like over this little ridge and out of my sight. They never went to me. They never saw me. They had like no idea I was there. I ended up like walking a little further down this ridge to where I thought the third buck was bedded. And I sat there for like 3 or 4 hours and I was playing like mind games with myself. Like that buck's still got to be here. Like, I never saw him leave. And then I would go like, he must have slipped out with those other bucks and I just didn't see him, you know, one of those deals. So this 3 or 4 hours goes by and I'm like, screw it. He's got to be gone. So I get up and I walk, like, I have my socks on at this point, you know, I'm slipping in, and I take like 2 steps from where I was sitting, and he jumps up. He was like 30 yards below me, bedded in front of this little tree the whole time. And I had no idea he was there, but I mean, I knew he was there, but I didn't know he was there. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I blew him out, and he runs down the drainage, up the draw, and up the other side. He's like 200 yards away from me at this point. And he does the typical mule deer thing. He stops broadside and looks back at me. And I just see that frame going like, whew. And I'm just like, you gotta be freaking kidding me, man. I did everything right, except I got impatient. Yeah. And honestly, it came down to the water. I took my pack off. It was like 90 degrees outside. It's August like 18th at this point.
Yep.
And I took my pack off and I was thinking like, this stock's going to come to an end in like an hour tops, maybe two. Well, it didn't. And after sitting there for like 4 hours, just getting cooked, I was like, I just mentally fell apart, basically. Yeah. Totally shit the bed.
That's a tough situation, dude. It's so dang hot. In 2020, I killed a deer in Nevada with my bow. And I killed it opening morning at like 7 o'clock, but it was August 10th. I'm like, so hot. And like hit the tips of his horns were still soft. Like they were still growing. It's crazy. It's cool how early you can hunt them over there, but it is freaking hot.
Yeah. And that year I drew, I didn't know these things existed. It's funny. I pulled into this gas station and, you know, I'm just stupid guy from Washington, right? So I pull into this gas station in the middle of nowhere in Nevada and I get out of my truck to get some diesel, and this giant freaking Mormon cricket thing jumps out of nowhere. I'm like, what the hell is that thing? Those things were everywhere that year. Like the highway was covered in them. Like they were using like snowplow blades to like blow their guts off the road. And anyway, so I hike into the mountains the first night and I see some bucks, which was cool. But I'm setting up my tent and I'm, you know, I'm solo. I got this little Seek Outside Silex, and I was so glad I never bring the floor, like the nest. I always sleep. Dude, I woke up in the morning and those freaking Mormon cricket thing, I think that's what they're called, Mormon crickets.
Yeah.
They were everywhere. I was surrounded by them. I'm like, what in the F did I get myself into? You got some crazy bugs out here, man.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, because I saw a post like yesterday, 2 days ago, that they were starting to come out and like they were covering the roads again. It's crazy. It's a sight to see.
Oh my God. And they smell like, when I got home from that hunt, obviously I drove the highway for hundreds of miles and their guts were stuck to my, like my tailpipe of my truck. And I could smell them for weeks cooked to my truck. It's just funny. I never seen them before. I got over there and I'm like, what in the world is going on over here, man? This place is something else.
Yeah. Well, dude, results come out Friday probably. So I know they did the draw today. And so hopefully pull some tags.
Yeah. I did not apply this year. I just bought the points.
Gotcha.
Is stupid. I know, but, I told you before we hit record, my brother and I started a business and I already had to cancel a hunt this year, which I haven't canceled a hunt ever that I can recall. So I didn't apply in like a lot of states besides Wyoming. I just bought points, which I hate doing because there's always that random, you know.
Yeah.
Arizona, I have a handful, like a decent amount of points, and I could have drawn a pretty good archery elk hunt this year. A late season hunt, but in a phenomenal unit that I didn't apply for. I just bought my point. So this year is weird for me, man. Like, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do. Honestly, I'm hoping I can get this Wyoming trip in, which I'm going to Wyoming no matter what. Like I waited way too long for that tag. So I'm going, period. But normally I would do like 5 or 6 big out of state hunts a year. And this year is going to be a little different. Yeah. So
that's all right, man. Yeah. I killed a bull in 2020 in Nevada. And so I'm in my 7-year waiting period right now. So I can't even apply or build points for elk right now. So.
Yeah. I saw that. Is that bull? That was a muzzleloader bull.
Yeah. Muzzleloader bull. Yep.
Yeah. I saw that on your page. That was a giant bull. What'd that thing score? Did you score it?
Yeah. He was like 330s. He was like, all of his like points are like, they're like, he's super well all around, but he was only 31 inches wide. And I obviously made him look a little bit wider in the picture, but it was, we had put a stock on like Bull Ridge. I'm sure you follow them, but they ended up killing a bull that I was within 100 yards twice of him. And he ended up going like 365, but I was hunting that bull quite a bit. And he had blew us out on a few stalks, but it was the last day I could hunt. And these bulls, we spotted them from like 500 yards and they came all the way up to 60 yards from us. And I ended up shooting them offhand at 60 yards, but I was stoked with them. That was my second bull. I killed the bull in Utah with a youth tag when I was like 13, I think. It was just a small 6-point with a rifle. But then I was pretty stoked with him. He was, I mean, a sweet bull. Like Nevada produces some big, big bulls and it's fun to hunt them. So.
Yeah, it cracks me up. I live in Washington, so we have Roosevelt elk on the west side where I live, and they have huge bodies, but they don't grow. I mean, we do have some giant bulls. Don't get me wrong. There are 300 inch bulls running around out there, but it's more typical to shoot like a 210 inch raghorn. Like that's like the bull you see for them like 90% of the time. So when I hear guys say like, you know, 330 bull or 320 bulls, he's okay. I'm just like laughing. Like, that's a freaking giant bull, dude. A 300 inch bull is a big elk, you know?
For sure. Yeah. And it's funny because growing up in Nevada, like we just have big bulls. Like,
yeah,
you go out one morning and you see a handful. Like my dad had a tag 2 years ago in Nevada, like one of our favorite units to hunt in Nevada. And my dad, he's killed a few bulls and he was wanting that next level bull.
So yeah,
we were passing like 330 bull, 340 bulls, like almost daily. And it's just like tearing your guts out that they're sweet bulls, but then you're trying to kill these big bulls and you know they're out there, like they get killed every year. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I go from that growing up and that's all I knew. And then I move up to Idaho and I start over the counter archery elk hunting. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I want a 6-point, like, you know, a big bull. And then I get up there and I'm like, crap, like, Not that like they don't produce big bulls or that I only kill big bulls. I had never archery hunted by myself before. And by like the second day, I'm like, I'm shooting a spike if it comes in. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm shooting I can shoot. So it's changed my perspective a lot going up to Idaho, and because I haven't killed a bull with my bow yet. So that's on the bucket list here soon. So I've only had a couple of years up in Idaho, but a lot of it was solo and I had a lot of close calls and it was tough, but I need to, hopefully in 2 years, I'll have a limited entry Utah archery bull tag. So we'll
see. That'll be awesome. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the day that I draw one of those premier elk tags in Utah or, Nevada, I mean, or New Mexico, which is a lottery obviously, but
Arizona.
That one's been tough for me to decide what to do. Cause with the points I have, I can draw, like I said, a sweet, like late season archery elk tag. And you have like 2 weeks to hunt or whatever. You have a lot of time, but it's bow hunting. It's dry. It's probably cold. Slipping out on a bull is going to be tough.
For sure.
But if I want to draw like a rifle tag and a, like a good unit where you have a, like a real chance at a 320 or bigger bull, like it's like 15, 20 years, something like that. So it's like, I kind of go back and forth. Do I draw this late season tag and see what I can do? Or do I wait another, you know, however many years? So
yeah.
Anyway, it's always a tough decision to make.
Yeah. I like to think, I mean, my dad was awesome to me and he put me in like for a lot of states as soon as I hit 12 and was building points. So I'm lucky enough to have like a pile of points in a lot of states, but I feel like I have a few states like Utah and Nevada and like New Mexico with the lottery. Like I'll save those for like my bigger bowl. Like I'll wait and hold out for a good tag, but it's awesome to go to say Arizona and Idaho or wherever and hunt every 4-ish years. Right. And just mix those up. So you're always hunting. So,
yeah, totally. Totally. All right, man. Well, I've had you on for, it's already been an hour, which is crazy. The time always flies on these podcasts. So, I know it's getting late over there and my old ass has got to get up for work here pretty soon. So let's just wrap this thing up. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on Instagram and YouTube?
Yeah. Just outwest.hunters on Instagram and YouTube. So that's my handle pretty much anywhere. Have a little Facebook, but kind of don't do anything with that. So Instagram and YouTube is where I'm at. Go check out the spring bear hunt and let me know what you think about it.
Of course, will do. And I've been really bad about this. I'm going to ask you guys, if you're still listening, do us a favor, take a minute and leave us a review on the podcast. I think we have like 16 reviews right now, and we've had thousands of downloads. So if you could just take a second out of your day and leave us a review, I would really appreciate it.
Heck yeah, man. I enjoy listening to your stuff. You produce some awesome YouTube videos, and they're just getting better. Like I said, I've followed you for a while, and I was like, you're one of the channels that I go through. I'm like, yep, that's one I need to watch. And so that and the podcast, they're always good. So I appreciate you putting out the content.
Absolutely, man. And I appreciate you listening and watching for a couple of years now. You know how hard it is to grow and finding people that are willing to help share your channel and, you know, promote each other's, you know, it's kind of rare. A lot of guys aren't willing to do that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, man, no problem. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks for your time tonight. And yeah, I'll get this thing out in a couple of weeks.
Okay, man. Stay in touch.
Absolutely.
We'll see you, man.
See ya.